Other Athenians as well, those too stubborn to go into exile, had taken refuge there. The defenders, having had weeks to provision themselves and to erect barricades, wooden walls, across the ramp, could now plausibly regard themselves as well braced for a lengthy siege. Yet their spirits, all the same, must have quailed at their first sight of the enemy. No better view could have been had of the arrival of the great king into Athens than from the heights of the sacred rock. Fire, incinerating the blessed fields and groves of Attica, heralded Xerxes' coming. Gazing from the western battlements, the defenders watched impotently as the royal banners were raised triumphantly over their city. The hordes of the great king's army were already swarming everywhere, taking possession of the familiar streets, laying waste the defenders' homes. In the Agora, and on the slopes of the Areopagus, the hill which rose between the Pnyx and the Acropolis, engineers could be seen sinking boreholes. Evidently, the barbarians were too mistrustful of the Athenians even to drink their water. Other work parties busied themselves with looting and stripping the city bare. Meanwhile, above the Agora, the great king had established his command post on the Areopagus. Archers were ordered onto the hill and instructed to shoot fire arrows at the barricades blocking the ramp of the Acropolis. The wooden wall, betraying the defenders, was soon ablaze, but the defences beyond it held firm. The great king, anxious to send the good news to Persia, began to grow impatient. The assault was renewed. Arrows fizzed, and boulders, levered over the side of the fortifications by the defenders, crashed and rolled. But now, with the Athenians at full stretch, the great king's officers began surveying the opposite end of the Acropolis. Here, where the drop was so sheer that not even a single guard had been stationed, elite forces finally succeeded in scaling the face of the cliff. As at Thermopylae, so now, talents honed in the Zagros enabled the great king to stab a Greek garrison in the back. The Acropolis was stormed. Many of the defenders hurled themselves off the battlements in preference to waiting to be slaughtered. Others sought sanctuary in the temple of Athena. The Persians, naturally, massacred the lot. Then, as their master had ordered, they put everything on the summit of the rock to the torch. What would not burn, they demolished, toppled, or smashed. The great storehouse of Athenian memories, accumulated over centuries, the city's very past, was wiped out in a couple of hours. Plumes of thick smoke, billowing up from the inferno, began to blacken the Attic sky. To the Athenians, standing frozen upon their ships, or on the slopes of Salamis, the message they advertised was one of purest horror. To their allies, too, the spectacle was barely less demoralizing. Watching as evening turned to night, the silhouette of Mount Aegileus was lit an angry red. Now, with the whole of the Attic coastline, from Sunium to the Acropolis, a blaze of burning temples, the Persian victory was being broadcast far out to sea. There was no need for any of the great king's squadrons, if they were still making their way to port that night, to rely on the stars. Their oars, beating the waters, would have churned up waves illuminated by fire. Dawn showed the Acropolis a blackened, smoking ruin. Once a nest of demons, now purged by flames, it stood cleansed at last of the lie. Xerxes, the Lord Mazda's servant, had performed his bounden duty to the truth.